Well, last week I'm going, oh. Was that this? Yeah, there we go. Let's start over. It's Easter Sunday. So blessed to be with you guys. So blessed by what God is doing in our midst. So blessed by the baptism we had this week. So blessed by the work that the children's ministry did over at Lipscomb Academy on Tuesday. So blessed by the things that happened with Rita on Friday. So blessed by the Easter egg hunt we had yesterday. But so blessed to be the children of God who have gathered this morning. And we get to announce what is a special thing to announce on Easter Sunday morning. It's on the screen for you. Christ has risen, and then the reply is, yes, he has risen indeed. And I'd love for you to say that with me this morning. I'll say Christ is risen, and you add, yes, he has risen indeed. Is that all right? Okay, ready? Christ has risen.
Yes, he has risen indeed.
Let's try it one more time. Christ has risen.
Yes, he has risen indeed.
And I hope by the time we're done this morning, you'll have thought through what those words can mean, not just for this moment, but for the moments that will pass after it throughout this week. You remember last week, we had a very heavy message where we talked about the fight that's happening in our world between good and evil. And it really hit home for us as a community a week ago Monday with the events that happened at Covenant School. And it reminded us that we live in a fallen world. We're reminded that Satan is the prince of this world and that difficult times lie ahead for us. That he is the father of lies, and he tells us lies about God, he tells us lies about ourselves, and he tells us lies about what makes for the good life. And it's not just that we believe these lies, but that we begin to live in these lies. And that is the world that we live in today. But the reason that Friday gets called Good Friday is because it's the day where good ultimately triumphed over evil at the cross. And so we realize that we're living in this moment where God has announced that he is victorious, and we need to understand that. This morning, I want to take you to the events that unfolded since then, on that Friday and then into Sunday, and remind you of this gospel story that really shapes the way we look at the world. It begins in the Garden of Gethsemane. And if you travel there on the night Jesus was betrayed, you might remember that after breaking bread together, they went to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus asked his disciples to watch and to pray that they might not fall into temptation. To pray with him, the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. Jesus took the three, Peter, James, and John, with him a little farther, and he said, "My soul is agonizing to the point of death. Please pray with me." And he went a little further, and he began to pray. And as he prayed, sweat poured out of him like drops of blood as he began to talk to God about what was about to unfold. Because what he knew was happening was that God was asking him to drink a cup. And he kept saying, "If it's possible, let this cup pass from me." What was in the cup was all the evil, all the sin, all the contamination of this world. Jesus was taking it into himself. And he asked God, "Could there not be any other way? But not my will, but your will be done." And you might remember on three occasions, Jesus prayed this prayer. And on three occasions, he came back to his apostles and found them sleeping. "Could you not watch and pray for a single hour?" And then about that moment, Judas and the soldiers appeared, and Jesus was betrayed with a kiss. Jesus asked, "What will you do with the rest of my disciples? Let them go." And they scattered. Peter grabbed a sword, cut off the Malchus' ear. Jesus healed it back and said, "Put the sword away. Those who live by a sword die by a sword. This is not a battle about swords. This is a battle where prayer was your best weapon. And so Jesus was escorted from the Garden of Gethsemane, chained and bound, and taken to Caiaphas, the high priest. It was there that Jesus was placed in a kangaroo court. It was all rigged. It happened at night, not during the daytime. False witnesses were drawn. Jesus was struck. People made fun of him and insulted him. All things that violated the code of conduct in a law court. But it was the high priest who said, "It is expedient that one would die on behalf of all the people." And so they bound Jesus and sent him away to Pilate to be executed. And Jesus was taken to the fortress of Antonia. And here inside, he met with Pilate. And as they talked, Pilate asked him questions about truth. And Jesus talked to him about lies and about the prince of lies and the father of lies and how all truth was in him. And Pilate was like, "What even is the truth?" By the time he was done talking to Jesus, he wanted to wash his hands and let Jesus go. "I find no fault in him." But the people began to cry out, "If you let this one go, you are no friend of Caesar. For he opposes Caesar. He claims to be a king. Caesar's dominion." And with that, he talked to Jesus again. "Are you truly a king? Are you asking, or is someone else? It is as you say." From that point on, Pilate wanted to let him go, but the people kept crying out to crucify him. Pilate said, "Well, how about this? How about I give you Jesus as the one I'll set free? Because it's that time of year where I set one prisoner free." And they began to cry out, "Barabbas, set free Barabbas, the insurrectionist. What about Jesus? Crucify him, crucify him." And with that, Jesus was taken here and he was whipped. He was taken here and they played a game with him. They put a crown of thorns upon his head and a robe upon him and pretended he was a king and struck him and made all kinds of jokes at his expense. And then they made him carry his cross on the Via Dolorosa, the way of the cross. As he was traveling along, Jesus fell. And a soldier thrust a spear into the face of a man from Cyrene named Simon and said, "You pick up the cross and carry it for him." And so Simon carried the cross to Calvary, Golgotha, the place of the skull. And there Jesus was executed between two thieves, just as Isaiah had prophesied 700 years before. There was a sign that hung there. Pilate had it written. It was written in Aramaic and in Latin and in Greek, and it said, "The King of the Jews." And Pilate announced, "What I have written, I have written." Jesus hung on the cross from 9 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. And if you listen closely, you heard him speak 7 times. You heard him say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." To a thief, he said, "Today you will be with me in paradise." To his mother, he said, "Woman, behold your son," and looked at John. And then he looked at John and said, "Son, behold your mother." And John took Mary into his home. Later, he cried out with a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me?" As things came towards the end, he cried out, "I am thirsty." A little bit later, "It is finished." And then he said, "Into your hands I commit my spirit." And with that, Jesus breathed his last. And at that moment, the curtain in the temple that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. It was as if God was announcing, the way has been made right again. We're back to the days of the Garden of Eden where God and man can dwell together. The price has been paid. Your sin has been atoned for. They went and asked for the body of Jesus, and they asked, was he already dead? They sent soldiers to break his legs, but he was already dead, and so a soldier thrust a spear into his side. And John watched as a mixture, a separation of blood and water flowed from his side. Sorrow and love flowing, mingled down. Mary was there, and so were the women. And we can't help but look at this image and not think back to the day that Jesus was dedicated as a baby. And Simeon, the old man, was there. And he told Mary that day, a sword will pierce your own soul as well. Jesus was taken down from the cross, and Joseph of Arimathea, a rich man who loved Jesus but secretly, came, asked for the body, and took it to this freshly hewn tomb in which no one had ever been laid. It was found in a garden. And Nicodemus, who had first come to Jesus at night, came with 70 pounds of spices. And they quickly prepared the body of Jesus because it was almost Sabbath day, the day of preparation. And so they did all that they could to prepare him for his burial, placed him in the tomb, rolled a stone over the tomb, and later that day, guards were placed there to seal the tomb and to keep it tight. We call that day Good Friday. But what we know is death is not the end of our story. We also know that Saturday occurred. And one of the things that we know about Saturday is that there's always a distance between death and resurrection. It's what the early church called the dark night of the soul. It's when you carry on your person the suffering and the anguish and the heartache and the pain of knowing that we live in a fallen world, that God is doing something about it, but it doesn't happen as quickly, as painlessly, or as effortlessly as we would like for it to. There's always that period of mourning, that period of mourning that hopefully one day gets turned to dancing on God's time. But it was early in the morning, on a Sunday morning, as Scott Tillman read for us, and the women came wondering who would roll the stone away, knowing that the work of finalizing the preparation of the body of Jesus needed to be done. And they wondered who would roll the stone away. And when they arrived, they found it already rolled away. And an angel there with this important question: why are you looking for the living among the dead? He's risen, just as he told you he would. Now, go and tell his disciples that Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. And the women were so overjoyed and overwhelmed that they came running to find the disciples. And when the disciples heard them, it sounded like gibberish, like nonsense to them. They didn't understand what was taking place. But what we know is a race occurred. John and Peter went racing for the tomb. John was young, he ran much faster. Peter was an older guy like me. Took him a little longer. John arrived first and he peeked inside. And what he saw inside did not look like chaos, but looked like order. It didn't look like a body that had been stolen. It looked like things were folded up nice and neat, just like they ought to be. And he began to wonder what was happening. And then Peter arrived, and he came running in too, and they saw even the face cloth folded up separately, When John saw this, it says, he began to believe. Later that night, two men were headed to Emmaus. And as they walked along the road, Jesus appeared with them. But he was hidden from them recognizing him. And so he did what every good Jewish man would do when he joined a walking party. He wanted to know, what is it that we're talking about? And the two looked at him like he was nuts and said, are you the only person in Jerusalem that doesn't know what's happened? It's what everybody's talking about. And Jesus said, well, tell me about it. What is this that you're discussing? Tell me a little bit more. And they said, well, we're talking about Jesus of Nazareth. He was a prophet, powerful in word and in deed before God and the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since this took place, and some of our women, they just really amazed us today. They went to the tomb this morning, but they didn't find his body there. They came and told us that there was a vision of angels who said he was alive. And some of our companions, they went running to the tomb and they found things just as the woman had said, but they did not see him. And Jesus began to say, didn't you see this coming? Is this surprising to you? How foolish you are and slow of heart not to believe everything the prophets have spoken. They've been saying that the Christ, the Messiah, would have to suffer these things before he would enter his glory. And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus began to explain the scriptures concerning himself. And what I think Jesus wanted to explain to his followers was that God was taking story after story after story after story that they knew so well and was stacking them on top of each other, one after the other, saying, notice this, notice that. Look what God is doing. Think back to the story of Abraham offering Isaac, his one and only beloved son. Think about Isaac walking up the hill, carrying the wood and asking, where is the sacrifice? And Abraham saying, on the mountain of the Lord, God will provide a lamb. Think about the Passover lamb and the story of killing the Passover lamb, taking the blood, painting the door frame of the house so that those inside would be passed over. The substitute of the lamb's blood would take the place of their blood, and all who were inside the home would be spared. Think about the day that Moses took the blood of a bull, placed it in a bowl, and asked the people of Israel, are you really going to be faithful in following after God? Do you really want to be the people of God? And when they said, yes, we do, he took the blood and he began to fling it upon the people so that they'd all be marked by the blood. And that would represent that they are the people of God. And what God is doing today is marking his people through the blood of his son, the Messiah. Or think about the Day of Atonement, when the high priest takes an animal and places his hands upon him and confesses all the sins of the people, everything they've done wrong in that year, every shameful, terrible, ugly thing gets placed upon this animal. And then you remember what they do with this animal. They send it off into the wilderness. And the high priest announces, as far away as that animal is from you, God has taken your sin away. And this is what God was doing through his Messiah today. Or think about the suffering servant Isaiah wrote about over 700 years ago. Think about what he says about God is going to take this one, and by his wounds we will be healed. That it is through his sins that we will be set free. that he will be pierced, that he will be bruised, that he will be broken. The punishment that brought him peace would be placed, that would bring us peace, was placed upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. Jesus would look at them and say, don't you see? The Messiah, Jesus, is the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. But as they walked along, I think Jesus would have also said, and if you'd been paying attention, you would have noticed these glimpses of resurrection throughout God's story. You'd realize that when Enoch walked with God and was not because God took him, that that was a foretaste of the resurrection. That when Isaac came down from the mountain as the son of Abraham, that that was a foretaste of the resurrection. That when the children of Israel passed through the Red Sea on dry land, and that they weren't killed, but Pharaoh's army was, that was a foretaste of God's resurrection. And when the people cried out because they had bit by evil snakes in the midst of the wilderness, and they turned their eyes toward the bronze serpent in the middle of the camp, and they were healed, that was a foretaste of the resurrection. And when Joshua led the children of Israel to the Jordan River and the waters part, and they passed through, another generation experienced resurrection. And then there's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were thrown into a fiery furnace, and the Son of Man meets them inside, protects them, ushers them out. That was a foretaste of resurrection. Or when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, and the cave was placed with a stone over the entrance, and he lived in there overnight. And the next morning, when the king came to check on him and the stone was rolled away, they discovered inside that Daniel was alive. That was a foretaste of resurrection. Or when Elijah went up to the heavens in a fiery chariot, that was a foretaste of resurrection. Or you remember when Elisha was buried, and years later another was going to be buried, and some renegades came to trap the party that was doing the burial, and they just threw this body into the tomb with Elisha, and when the body touched his bones, he was alive again. That was a foretaste of resurrection. Or when Ezekiel was led to the valley of dry bones and was asked this question, "Son of man, will these bones live again? Only you know, Lord. Only you know. Prophesy to these bones. Tell these bones to live." And so I prophesied to these bones, and bone connected with bone, and the rattling began to happen in the valley. And then God said, "Prophesy to the flesh." And so I prophesied to the flesh, and sinew and bone and flesh began to come together again. And then I heard him say, "And prophesy to the breath, that the breath might come back into these." And so I prophesied to the breath, and the breath came and filled these bones, and they stood up again as a vast army. That was a foretaste, a glimpse of the resurrection. Even in Isaiah 53, the suffering servant, if you're paying attention, look in verse 11. There was a glimpse of the resurrection even there. After the anguish of his soul, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. About that time, they came to the place where they were going to spend the night, and Jesus pretended like he was going to go on, and they said, "Come, abide with us. Fast falls the eventide." And so into the house he went. And as they sat down to eat, they asked him, "Would you like to say grace?" And picking up a piece of bread, he held it up like he often had. He snapped it and he said, "Blessed art thou, O Lord, who brings forth this bread from the ground." And he handed the bread to the two who were sitting there with him, and their eyes were opened. And they began to realize what had just happened. Were not our hearts burning within us as he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? It was night, but they got up and they ran all the way back to Jerusalem because they had a message that needed to be heard. It's the message that you announced at the beginning of our message today. They came running back to Jerusalem to tell the disciples, "He is risen. Yes, he is risen indeed." And what we need to understand this morning is that everything we read about in our Bibles, everything from the beginning of creation all the way through the coming of Jesus into the world, was stacking story upon story upon story to say, this is what God is doing for you in Jesus Christ. This is what God is doing for you, removing your sin, setting you free, wiping you clean again, giving you new hope, making you the people of God. God is doing it all. And he's been giving us glimpses of resurrection all through the story so that we would know that God has power over sin, over death, and whatever we are facing today. Even Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me, closes with these words. A posterity shall serve him. It will be recounted of the Lord to the next generation. They will come and declare his righteousness to a people who will be born, that he has done it. It is finished. God has done it all. And so we come this morning to remind ourselves that Christ is risen. Yes, he is risen indeed. I hope this morning that you'll ponder what that means for you. Because the world is telling you lies about God. And the truth about God is God so loves the world that he sent his one and only Son, that whoever would be found in him would have eternal life. The world is telling you lies about yourself. Some of these lies is that you're filled with shame and that you'll never be any good, that you'll never matter, that your life will never have meaning. And God says, no, you're my child. For some of us, what we hear is you got to do it yourself. And God says, nope, you can't do it yourself. The only hope you have is Jesus, the Messiah. And the only hope you have of living the good life is to surrender your life to the one who has given his life for you. And so the message of this Easter morning is that Christ has done it all. He's done everything there is to be done. And what he wants to know is, will you surrender to him? If you've never given your life to him in baptism, that is participation in the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. If you've given your life to him in baptism, but you haven't been living your life for him lately, this is the day to recommit your life to him. To ask that the same power that raised Jesus from the dead be the same power that revitalizes your life, forgives your sin, and re-strengthens you for the journey that comes ahead. This is a day for resurrection. This is a day to announce he is risen. Yes, he's risen indeed, and that changes everything. If you're subject to the call of Christ in any way, we encourage you to come to the front as we stand and sing. My hope.